Thank you. One of Chicago's busiest young narcotics peddlers is found guilty today on 9 violations of the federal narcotics law. He faces a possible maximum sentence of 45 years in prison, a fine of $18,000. The 23-year-old Maurice Castillo of 3318 West Van Buren Street, who has long been acknowledged by youthful West Side dope addicts as a big shot in the narcotics activity in the Fillmore and Lawndale Police District. Castillo, the son of a Halsted Street barber, himself a quondam practitioner of the barbering trade, was one of the key witnesses in the murder trial of former Chicago policeman Michael Moretti, who is now serving a life sentence in Joliet for shooting 3 youths in the fall of 1951. The shooting took place in the backseat of an automobile in a vacant lot just west of Halsted Street on Blue Island. 2 of the youths were killed, 21-year-old Edward Salvi and 15-year-old Arthur Gamino. The third, 18-year-old Leonard Monaco, was wounded. Monaco testified the shooting was without provocation, but Moretti said he fired in self-defense after he rounded up the trio in the course of an investigation of narcotics activity in the neighborhood. At the time of the Moretti trial, Castillo appeared frequently, a swaggering, arrogant zoot suitor. He's well known to local and federal law enforcement officials. After the federal jury found Castillo guilty today, federal judge John Barnes ordered his $5,000 bond revoked, remanded him to jail pending a hearing on a motion for a new trial set for February 16th. Today's conviction is regarded as an important gain in the war against the dope traffic. But here's an odd angle. A government informer whose life allegedly had been threatened during the trial told this reporter that the police protection that he'd been afforded until today has now been withdrawn. My wife and I, he said, are afraid to go out on the street. Red China has lined up solidly with a new Russian hierarchy, announcing it is stepping up military preparations and has lashed out at what it termed U.S. aggression. Premier Zhou Enlai sent a message to Nikolai Bulganin, the new Soviet premier, extending on behalf of Red China's people and government sincere and warm greetings. I am confident, Zhou said, that you, under the leadership of the United and Monolithic Central Committee of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, will surely make great achievements in the cause of the great Soviet people's communist construction and defense of world peace. A big mouthful, but the Senate of the United States made it brief and to the point today by giving President Eisenhower the big stick that he asked for. The upper house, by a vote of 64-6, okayed the defense treaty between Formosa and the United States. The treaty legally binds us to fight for Formosa if it's attacked, and the chief executive thinks the pact will head off war by making that clear to Red China. But in the critical area, men of the 7th Fleet are keeping their fingers on the triggers in the tense areas surrounding the Dachan Islands. Evacuation of the islands is almost completed, but several incidents have had a disquieting effect. Red anti-aircraft fire shot down one American plane, damaged another. The crew of the lost bomber was saved. Shortly after the air attack, one of the ships of the 7th Fleet saw what looked like a submarine periscope some 100 miles from the Dachans. In Beiping, a Red Chinese broadcast charged that the bomber, which was shot down, had dived and strafed communist fishing boats. The fleet today tightened its formations. It also ordered a 24-hour anti-aircraft alert as a precaution against more serious trouble. In Washington, President Eisenhower says he doesn't consider the communist downing of that American bomber a serious incident. The president told his Washington news conference that the Navy bomber, as Mr. Eisenhower put it, got a little lost, wandered in a bad area, and got hit. And dispatches from the Far East bear that out. They indicate the bomber accidentally strayed close to the Chinese, to the Red Mainland. Members of the House Ways and Means Committee reported today that they've tentatively approved, by a margin of 2-1, the president's request for a 3-year extension of the reciprocal trade treaty. They said a similar margin gave approval to the president's bid for authority to cut tariffs 5% for each of the 3 years. Mr. Eisenhower asked the authority as a means for expanding world trade. American labor may be united next year for the first time in 20 years. AFL and the CIO leaders have agreed to merge the two big labor organizations, which cover some 15 million American workers. It would be the first time they've stood together since John L. Lewis split them nearly 2 decades ago. Under the terms of the tentative merger agreement, AFL President George Meany would head the new organization. CIO President Walter Reuther says he'll be glad to serve in any capacity. The agreement was reached at meetings in Miami Beach, is subject to approval by the conventions of both groups later this year. 2 United States Air Force F-95 Starfire jet fighters crashed today, 16 miles from Goose Bay Airport in Labrador, and the 4 crew members were killed. U.S. Northeast Air Command headquarters said the jets burned in the bushland east of the Big Labrador Terminal. They were on routine flights. Each plane carried two men. The Air Force did not make clear whether the jets crashed independently or tangled somehow in the air. Back here in Chicago, it was announced this afternoon that Claude Murphy, the convict down at Joliet Penitentiary, who came up and made some rather startling statements concerning the policy racket in Chicago to that federal grand jury investigating policy. Well, it turned out today that Mr. Murphy apparently had his story somewhat colored by his imagination. A criminologist from Northwestern University said that eight separate lie tests showed that Murphy was, as he phrased it, a big liar. Very clear terms. And at the meeting of the Chicago Crime Committee this afternoon, executive session, they heard seven witnesses who seemed to bear out the report of Fred Imbaugh, the criminologist. The chief counsel for the crime committee, Irwin Cohen, came out after the meeting, told reporters that Murphy's story substantially was a falsehood. That statement by Cohen was attacked by Alderman Freeman and Alderman Geisler, who said they believed that some of Murphy's story was true. Other aldermen then raised the cry of politics. It was a stormy session. During this past several days, this reporter has been trying to get down to the International Amphitheater to see the thing that a great many other people have been to see this past week. Of course, I'm talking about the Chicago National Boat Show. It's a wonderful show. Apparently this year it's bigger and better than ever. I certainly wanted to get there, but barring that, not being able to get to the mountain, I've sort of gotten the mountain to come up here. And that's kind of a loose phrase to use because this is my longtime friend Guy Hughes, who is the executive director of the Chicago National Boat Show. And speaking of mountains, he's not small. Guy, how tall are you?
I'm 6'5", Jim.
And when I first knew Guy Hughes, he was playing a lot of basketball and football for Joliet Township High School down a few miles from here. And you played some ball after that, too, didn't you?
Yes, I played pro ball around this part of the country also, semi-pro. In fact, I played a lot of basketball, football, and baseball throughout this part of the country.
Well, I might say that Guy is a happy ex-football player right now because the boat show is definitely a big success this year. Is that right, Guy?
Very much so, Jim. It's been growing for the last 3 years. And in fact, this year, we are amazed at the tremendous growth, both in size of the show and a number of people attending.
Well, I talked about it rather briefly last week, and so I talked about some of the things that the folks will see down there. Now, how about you telling us what they can see at the show?
Well, Jim, you can see practically anything in the way of boats or accessories into the boating industry, marine accessories, hardware, gadgets of all kinds, the very latest. In the boating line, I think there are some 518 different boats ranging from about a 6-foot pram up to a 42-foot luxury cruiser. In between, of course, we have the sailboats and the runabouts, inboard, outboard, outboard cruisers, which have grown both in number and in quantity during the past few years. We can also see the new changes that have taken place during the past year, particularly in the multicolors. They have patterned them very much after the latest automobiles. In fact, there's one or two boats in particular. They're inboard runabouts that look very much like the Cadillac automobile with the fins and so forth. Beautiful boats, and the interest is tremendous.
How many people have you had down there so far, Guy?
Well, as of last night, we had about 114,000 pass through the turnstiles. That doesn't, of course, count the several thousand dealers that have come from I imagine it will run practically every state in the Union. Last year we had about, I think, dealers here from about 8,700 or 9,000 dealers somewhere in that neighborhood from about 41 states, Canada, Alaska, Hawaii, and a couple of places in Europe.
Now, the gate up to this time, then, is substantially ahead of last year.
Oh, yes. It's I'd say it's about 12-13%.
Everyone is interested in those luxury cruisers, but for many of us, it's just a matter of going down and looking at them and saying, gee, I wish I had one like that. Lots of us, I guess, are interested in these 6-foot prams. As a matter of fact, my son has an 8-footer with sail, which is a great thing. But by and large, the greatest group of people who either go down to look or to actually consider buying a boat are those who are interested in Outboards, is that right, Guy?
That's right. For example, I think in 1941 we sold approximately 170,000 outboard motors. Last year we sold somewhere in the neighborhood of 500,000. This year we expect it to be over that by 10 to 15%. Now these outboards, of course, they're used for multiple purposes. The trend, I think, is to heavier motors because of this multiple purpose use. A few years ago, most everyone used a motor primarily for fishing. Today, they're using the motor for fishing, for water skiing, for cruising, for other hunting, and so forth.
Now, I want to get back into that and go up to it sort of step by step. We have a couple of 3 minutes left, anyway. In the old days, if you had a little motor, you wanted a small one that you could carry around, you rent a boat someplace, and that was it, right?
That's correct.
But now, when you're getting into a more highly developed motor, and into this multiple use business, then you want a larger motor, I suppose.
A larger motor. Also, the trailer has made it possible for a person to trail their boat along with them so that the boat, you can match them much more or more properly. And in renting boats, oftentimes it's impossible to get a large enough boat to handle a larger motor. So the trailer has made it possible to take the boat, the matched boat, with the match motor.
Well, what you're saying, in effect, then, is that actually the manufacturers of boat trailers have improved their product in the last few years.
Boat trailers, boats, and motors are as close together as, we'll say, ham and eggs and bread.
And they got them now so that even a tired old man like myself can get that boat into the water and back out again without collapsing?
Jim, either you or I can. really, it has swung over to today where it's a family sport. A woman, they're making it easy for a woman even to operate a boat with the automatic starters, with the balers, the automatic balers with the silent motors. I think about eight out of the exhibits, and most probably representing 95% of all the outboard motors sold, are talking about the silent motor today.
I've noticed that. I've noticed, of course, that each one has interesting claims for the values of their motors, but all of them are good motors, I suppose.
There's no question about that. It's like an automobile today, Jim. Motors are made by various companies with special features. Of course, the competition is very great, and they try to get a particular feature that will appeal to the public, but any motor today is a good motor.
Guy, I know you're prejudiced, being the president of the outboard boat and motor,
Outboard Boat and Motor Manufacturers
Association. So you'll naturally like outboards, but there's plenty of things for everybody to see down there. Sailboats, too, are there not?
Jim, I think we have 18 different sailboats. We have three foreign sailboats, I believe, in the show this year. One or two of them are just beautiful.
Well, I hope that everyone gets down there to see it. It's at the International Amphitheater, 43rd and Halsted. It costs how much to get in, Guy?
$1.25 for adults, 50 cents for children.
And well worth it, and that's the story from my old schoolmate, Guy Hughes, who's the boss of the whole thing, says it's a great thing, and I'm inclined to agree with him. I'll be back with a brief weather report after this message. Well, the weatherman says cloudy and turning colder tonight. Tomorrow, cloudy and colder with some snow. Low tonight in the upper 20s, the high tomorrow near 30. Right now, it's just about 40 degrees. And that's it for Wednesday, February, what, Guy?
You got me.
You'll pick out your own date. Thanks very much.